SiriusXM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
A very good Thursday, race fans. Sirius 219 XM 201 Sports Zone 964. If you're listening to Sirius XM online, and that's SteveBick.com too. Speaking of online, and there's no place to start, although there's so much to talk about, but no place to start except for yesterday's pick six. And I don't know what to make of how much money got bet in. To be honest, we speculated. I thought, it'll be about 3.5 times, 4 times. Maybe they'll $1.5 million, $1.7 million. Oh my God! It came out of the woodwork. Over $2 million into that pick six yesterday, and I'm guessing that the way things worked in terms of off the turf, it may have helped intrigue more people and draw people into the sequence. And I can only hope. I didn't hear anybody specifically after that second leg. But how about Seth Merrow yesterday? Absolutely sniffing out Strive for a Cure, the Dale Capuano Invader. But even with Capuano's nice numbers with firsters and lightly raced horses and all that, this was still not an easy horse to use prominently on your ticket. And if Seth got you to include Strive for a Cure, that's great. It got me to include him in the pick five. And when it was all done, going through this sequence, I just short-armed the pick five. I tried to sneak through with a small ticket, $48. I thought, they got enough going in the pick six. And after the first leg, sometimes when you get knocked out, let's say pick six, you get knocked out in the first leg and you say, okay, I'll get involved heavily in the pick five now and try to get it going. But that first leg, which was a race that ended up coming down to the two horses that made the most sense, Puffery and Unbridled Adventure, the public more or less got excited about the Chad Brown horse that stayed in, My Heart Belongs to Daddy, who was really at the best to me a B. There were several key lessons really that came out of this sequence. So you ended up getting 5-1 on Unbridled Adventure, who was the only MTO. Puffery went off a little under 3-2, ran well, looked like she was in good shape at the top of the stretch and even past the eighth pole. But Unbridled Adventure, Javier Castellano kept coming, and Puffery hung in for a few strides, and then Unbridled Adventure gets clear and wins. So you get a $12 horse to start the sequence, and you think, all right. Probably, I'm sure most people use the, any serious pick six ticket was using that MTO. Then came that maiden special weight, and Steam Engine got hard used and challenged and Joel Rosario finishing second in the first two legs. But Steam Engine, the Brad Cox 10-strike baby, it took a lot of pressure and was holding up to it pretty good for a certain portion. And then you could see here came Weston Hamilton. As who was it on Twitter said, Cowboy Jr., son of Steve Hamilton, came rallying up the inside. And the inside was a very good place to be. And there's an important consideration in the feature, of course, that happens, speaking of the inside. But strive for a cure. And boy, when he kind of burst through, I right away said to myself, wow, Seth was all over this. Strive for a cure, the Golden Sense, first-time starter. And it's funny, one of the people that liked that, I tweeted, you know, great job by Seth. And Jack Sisterson, who, of course, was on hand for Golden Sense and handled Golden Sense, you know, very much the way Jimmy Barnes ships and manages horses for the Baffert Barn. Jack Sisterson did that for Doug O'Neill for a long time before going on his own. And so when I think when Jack yesterday saw that we were applauding a Golden Sense firster, he must have smiled, because he certainly was part of the outstanding career of Golden Sense. And that is Golden Sense, his sixth first-time starter to win out of 40 to go to the post. So a nice 15% number for Golden Sense. Keep that in the back of your mind, Seth. That was the that's what hooked Seth, was Golden Sense firsters. Steam Engine was well clear at that point. So that knocked some people out. There's no doubt about it. That absolutely got to some people. Killy Beggs Captain, the MTO in the sixth, prevails. Thunder's Honor took all kinds of money, end up going off under 2-1 as the favorite, eclipsing Killy Beggs Captain. Morning Breeze a little under 5-2, and I used those were the two that I used, and I think you probably, you know, Morning Breeze I thought was running a winning race under Manny Franco, and Killy Beggs Jose Ortiz for John Terranova and the Cura stable. Then, and that helped. I mean, that kept a lot of people alive. If you were at that point, if you'd been knocked out of the six, you were alive for five. Potomac. Fourth leg rolls around, and here's a horse that a lot of people singled. I singled. And this was kind of an adventure. The two Diodoro horses, Mohican and Potomac, they came together. Manny Franco kind of came out off the rail because they were all chasing Baseline, who ran a courageous race for John Toscano. And Potomac was kind of grinding and grinding and grinding, and it didn't look like he was going to get there. And Mohican gave him a little bounce, and that seemed to, as we've talked before, Tony Black will be with us later. Tony will tell you that. You know, sometimes the horse's blood gets up, and they, you know, all of a sudden they dig in, and Potomac seemed to dig in a little bit more resolutely at that point, the last 16th, the last 150 yards or so, and prevailed. So now you've had a couple of favorites, a couple of low price horses. Killy Beggs actually wasn't a favorite, but I'm sure was on everybody's ticket. That got us to the feature, and John Velasquez is in the Hall of Fame, and he put on a Hall of Fame display on Cartwheeling Lulu, who gets away with a 23-flat opening quarter and a 47-1 half mile. Now, we had said to you yesterday that this filly had beaten the boys at Finger Lakes in her debut and had done it with some style. Here she is in the 7 hole. And you got to be kidding me. Not only does Johnny get to attend the pace and have a horse that, in a group of horses that looked like there was going to be, you know, plenty of parties interested in the front end. Not only does he get away by only having to attend a 23-second opening quarter, but he manages to get to the rail. Unbelievable. I mean, all day long, the inside had looked good. And the place to be. And from the 7 hole, Johnny finds himself into the stretch on the rail. And Manny Franco, and actually discussed this with Dave Donk, Manny Franco knows, came back and on Elegant Zip, and he knows that he got schooled. He gave up position on the inside with Elegant Zip, had the rail, wanted to run on the backstretch, and Manny Franco is strangling her. These are not, you know, these are not four-year-olds that have, you know, been through the battle and have been, you know, have learned to rate. It's a two-year-old. When they want to run, you got to let them run. This is a third career start. You can't strangle and wrangle the filly back in that circumstance. And in doing so, you also gave up position so that Johnny gets to the rail and then nobody can pass her in the stretch. Because you gave up your position and your all your advantages you relinquished. And Jose Ortiz didn't exactly distinguish himself either on more mischief. And as a result, congratulations to Roddy Valenti. Roddy, who bred this, I told you yesterday, with Dr. Belinsky, the Bustin' Stones. I mean, Roddy helps himself in 10 different ways. Gets a stake win for his stallion. And has a 2-for-2 homebred stake winning filly. And when it came to Cartwheel and Lulu, in the pick six, I used her, and the pick five used her as a C. And I used Elegant Zip was the A, More Mischief was the B, Cartwheel and Lulu the C. And the pick four, had her the pick four, but so what? The big opportunities here were the pick six and the pick five. So we all got, you know, we're all kind of scuffling at that point. And then the lesson discussed yesterday. Tequila Sunday, God bless her. She'll win a race, I'm sure, at some point. But you can't use horses like that. You don't come to Las Vegas and talk to a man like Mo Green like that. You don't use a horse like Tequila Sunday in your pick six ticket. Party in the Sand and Zecca were the two horses to use, and that was your exact come to the break, and the pick six, a very handsome return for those of you that negotiated. Congratulations, $67,779, and that's a nice pay on a challenging sequence. Even five of six paid $455. So those of you with multiple consos, you did quite well. And the pick five paid $1,800. Boy, oh boy. This was a fun afternoon at the races, and I hope you did well. And that's the name of that tune. We'll take a break. We'll come back. We've got a bunch of things to do today. In addition to Andrew Hawkins, we'll catch up on the typhoon that knocked out racing Saturday night, and the cleanup efforts, they are cleaning up much as the Carolinas are cleaning up. Milt Toby is going to join us. We've had Milt on every time he's written a book, and he has revisited the Shurgard case. And I didn't realize that this was his next project, but he's gone back to Shurgar, and new evidence. The coldest of cold cases in horse racing mysteries. Tony Black, Steve Askin, Rich Eng, of course, because it's Thursday. Tony Black in advance of the Cotillion, the Pennsylvania Derby, and so much more. We're going to finally get to Ashley Burness as well. Stay with us. Got a busy morning back after this.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Hey, what's going on? Mikey here, and I'm going to tell you about an offer from my good friends at ExpressBet. Let's be honest. We know you love playing the races, but you can't always make it to the track. Sometimes life just gets in the way of a good bet. Well, what if I told you about a place where you never miss a bet and you start with house money? You'd say I'm crazy, right? Well, not at ExpressBet. Your first $100 are on them. That's right. Sign up at ExpressBet.com using promo code XBRadio, bet $100, and they'll deposit $100 back into your account the very next day. Hey, plus you could get an extra $25 if you use Express Fund Direct Deposit. You see what I mean? House money for betting the races. It's that easy. Check it out at ExpressBet.com to learn more. And don't forget to sign up for promo code XBRadio. You're gonna love it. And that's a Mikey guarantee. Must be 18 years or older and 21 years old in certain states to open an account with ExpressBet and reside in a state where such activity is legal. Void or prohibited. National Gambling Support Line 800-522-4700.
Pennsylvania's breeding program is truly the most lucrative in North America. Now, we'll pay a 50% breeder award for PA-sired, PA-bred maidens who run first, second, or third, with 25% for non-PA-sired, PA-breds. Last year, the number of mares bred rose by 15% in Pennsylvania. And unlike some other states, our Racehorse Development Fund can only be used to support Pennsylvania breeding and racing. This is Brian Sanfratello. Please visit us at PABred.com.
Hi, this is retired race caller Tom Durkin. So, after this year's Derby, I stopped by Top Round Roast Beef on Shelbyville Road in St. Matthews. I got two sandwiches, one for back at the hotel and another for the trip back home to New York. The first one was so good, I had the other one right there. Certified Angus beef, roasted 5 hours, each one made to order. You can taste the difference. Top Round Roast Beef, Shelbyville Road, St. Matthews. Tell them Tom Durkin sent you. Oh, by the way, try the frozen custard too.
Hi, John Parada here, inviting you to join me in the Dublin Racing Club, along with friends like Steve Bick and Tom Durkin. If you have an interest in Ireland and horse racing, it's the best way to be involved with both. So log on now to DublinRacingClub.com and come join us at one of Ireland's 26 racetracks.
The Dublin Racing Club is designed to introduce racing fans to the ownership experience by participating in the sport in Ireland. For more information on the Dublin Racing Club, log on to DublinRacingClub.com.
Now, back to At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Been beat up and battered around. Been sent up and I've been shot down. You're the best thing that I've ever found. Handle me with care. Reputation's changeable. Situation's tolerable. Baby, you're adorable.
We're back at the races, coming up on 20 into hour one. Andrew Hawkins is going to join us, and looking forward to a conversation with Milt Toby. Milt, oh yeah, Milt has written so many terrific racing-related books, and I'm anxious to hear what got him hooked to go back to the Shurgar well. And of course, you know, there's some of you that are probably listening and may not know the Shurgar story, and we will tell it to you and let Milt to handle that. One of the strangest circumstances in not just racing history, but in sports and true crime history, really. I mean, it's unbelievable. So we'll look forward to that. I as we wait for to connect with Andrew, I sent out a tweet last night because I wanted to. I went looking for a picture of Lonesome Glory himself, and there's a wonderful Lonesome Glory website that Blythe Miller and the Millers and everybody that was involved with Lonesome Glory, must be 8 or 9 albums of each of his seasons and his awards and various, you know, various opportunities to celebrate Lonesome Glory. And if you really, you want to see an extensive recap of a remarkable career, you can go straight to lonesomeglory.com or to my Twitter feed, and it's the last, or it's a couple of tweets back. I also included the extensive Joe Clancy Bloodhorse obituary after Lonesome Glory was injured in just a paddock accident, and very sad on that front. But if you're not familiar with what he accomplished, Lonesome Glory, you really will do well to familiarize yourself with his career. I mean, it is incredible. 5-time champion. And considering in this era how everybody gets the drizzles when American horses go over to Ascot, an American horse going over to Cheltenham and winning certainly was notable, and seemingly at this juncture somewhat obscured or forgotten, but there's a lot of Lonesome Glory's storyline that is just really engaging, and not the least of which is the Miller family, Bruce, who trained, and Blythe and Chip as well. Chip, rode 4 or 5 times, but Blythe, of course, most closely associated with him. And I can tell you at Saratoga, when Blythe Miller was going out from the paddock on horses, all of us that were in our 20s at the time, we were like those caddies in Caddyshack, you know, gazing at Lacey Underalls. Blythe Miller absolutely dazzled all of us. That was that's my memory from that era. Lonesome Glory today, and I should mention the 4th and the 8th have come off the turf. Things obviously still not dried out, as Andy kind of speculated, but the 2 allowance races today, they remain on the grass. The 4th, let me say, wait a minute, let me go over here. I'm looking at the wrong place. The 5th and the 9th stay on. The 4th and the 8th come off. The 4th was a state bred claiming group, and the 8th was a starter allowance, fillies and mares. So they moved to the main track, and there's 2 MTOs in both of those races. But the 2 allowances, state bred fillies and mares, going 1/16 in the 5th, and first level open company allowance, 1/16, 3-year-old exclusives. And that's that nice group that we talked about with Brian Lynch. Emmy performance in that spot. Oscar performances, Little Sister. And that's a good group. Data Dependent in there, and Bratata for Chad Brown, both of them for Chad, and more. It's a good race. So that's the lawn news, and of course the 2 jump races that start the card. 10 race card today at Belmont, and the 10 race card at Chatin that we talked about last Thursday with Andrew Hawkins, that took a back seat to a scary situation as Carolinas was suffering from the hurricane effects, the typhoon that descended through Sha Tin and through Hong Kong. And if you didn't see the pictures, there was extensive damage. Andrew Hawkins, good morning.
Good morning, Steve. Yeah, very much extensive damage indeed.
I saw the pictures in the South China Morning Post and the cleanup effort. And, you know, in typical Hong Kong Jockey Club fashion, the place was, you know, the place was swept up and cleaned up, and trees and everything was quickly, you know, removed, and everybody got back the next day to training. But it was as intimidating a circumstance as you speculated upon.
Yeah, most definitely. I spoke to quite a number of long-term Hong Kong residents who say they've never seen anything quite like it. Some were comparing it to some storms. I think it was Typhoon Wanda, which goes back to the 1960s. So it was an intense storm. It was not as intense as it was when it hit the Philippines. The Philippines took most of the brunt of the storm. But for a city like Hong Kong, a very built-up city, to have that sort of wind and that sort of damage, it was quite something. I mean, it was incredible. I live in a 19-story apartment building, and I hunkered down. I'm on the top floor, and the building just kept swaying all day. It felt like an earthquake. So, look, there was no way that they were going to be able to race at Sha Tin in those sorts of conditions. As you said, the South China Morning Post has some great photos, not just of the race courses, but just of Hong Kong in general. But in terms of the race courses, Sha Tin lost a few, their rail went flying. There are a few trees down. Most of the damage was on the outside of the race course, but you could still see it noticeably on the racetrack. And same at Happy Valley, actually. Happy Valley probably copped it worse in terms of it's a very narrow area. It's a very, very enclosed area. Anyone who's ever seen Happy Valley racing will know that famous cityscape that encompasses the Happy Valley Racecourse, and there were trees down. There were a lot of trees down, and tram lines came flying down, and power poles. It was quite dangerous. So, look, as you say, in Hong Kong style, they've all got out there, cleaned it all up, and for the most part, Hong Kong's back to being a fully functioning city. There are still signs of damage, but Hong Kong's definitely back to functioning to normal and getting ready for another weekend race card.
Well, the typhoon was Typhoon Mangkhut. Mangkhut?
Mangkhut. Yeah, Mangkhut. There's something like that. It's the Thai word for mangosteen, apparently.
Mangosteen, the breadfruit?
Yes, exactly right, the fruit. So I don't know how they came up with that name, but there you go.
Wow. Well, for those of you that are familiar with Mutiny on the Bounty, if you know what breadfruit is, how about that? Mangosteen. Pretty crazy. You never know what we're going to learn. What we're going to learn here. It's pretty funny. I love it. Well, that leaves us with the opportunity to look ahead, and I'm amused. And I don't know if you have an answer for this, but the first four races on Saturday at Sha Tin, the Houston, the Chicago, the Los Angeles, and the Boston. What do we know why?
I can give you the answer, but I'll go through the rest of them, because race five is actually the reason why. But you have to race six is the New York Handicap, race seven is the San Antonio, race eight is the San Francisco, race nine is the Seattle, and race 10 is the Washington, D.C. Handicap. So the reason behind that is there's an annual race each year called the Farke Cup, which is race five on this weekend's program. And the Farke Cup, Farke is apparently the Cantonese colloquial term for the Stars and Stripes. It was instituted by an American organization here in Hong Kong. Apparently it was first run in the 1850s, and was run through until 1875. I don't know why they decided to stop it a year ahead of the centenary of the United States of America, but for some reason it was stopped, but they reinstituted it again in 1976, obviously to celebrate the bicentenary. And since then it has been run every year. It's not a stakes race. It's usually run for a lower class type of horse, but it's run consistently each year to sort of celebrate the United States of America. So that is why you have all the American references on this weekend's card. And yes, and as you say, another thing learnt there, and not just about Mancoot, but also Parquet. You can impress your Cantonese speaking friends with Parquet, meaning the Stars and Stripes.
I like it. Well, those of you can use that in a bar and win a bar bet or two. best of luck. pretty funny. Happy Valley, though. I did see some people were upset that there was no Happy Valley this week.
Yeah, that's right. There was no Happy Valley this week. There's always built in a couple of contingency weeks just in case there is a typhoon. Unfortunately, it didn't really play out well this week because there wasn't enough time from Sunday's meeting to be able to reschedule to Wednesday, so there'll be another meeting held likely in December. However, it's an opportunity to do some work on the tracks, change it from a summer grass to a winter grass, just be able to prepare the tracks for the workload they're about to cop, not just in terms of racing, but also in terms of training in the coming weeks and months.
Very good. Well, then let's look ahead. Let's look ahead to the weekend and Shot In with the Stars and Stripes card. I love it.
It's brilliant. It's funny actually, just always seeing this race pop up. It's usually actually run at Happy Valley. In the time I've been in Hong Kong, it's usually been run at Happy Valley, and you get a big American celebration in the beer garden at Happy Valley. But this time around, we deal with Shah Tin. So, and actually, there is a horse that I'm really quite keen on in the feature of the Parquet Cup, which is a horse called Pakistan Friend. Was a horse that was bought from the Hong Kong International Sale in March by the same owner, Kerm Din, who has Pakistan Star, obviously Hong Kong's Hong Kong's most famous, prolific horse at the moment. But Pakistan Friend, he's down in a low grade at the moment. He's only had two runs. His debut win in July was very impressive. He very similar in some ways to Pakistan Star, had no idea what he was doing, but he's managed to make up a lot of ground from near last, whereas Pakistan Star did it with an incredible burst of speed down the center of the track. Pakistan Friend did it by weaving in between runners. And he then stepped out a couple of weeks ago, ran third at his second start in Hong Kong, and it was a good effort over this Sha Tin 1400 over the 7 furlongs. He sticks to the 1400 now, but he looks a horse that should get a mile in time. But he's a very nice horse in the making, and he's still down in class 4. So definitely keep an eye on him. Race 5, number 3, Pakistan Friend.
Very good. And what else?
I'll give you another one coming up in race 7, the San Antonio Handicap. We have a horse stepping out called Friends of Ka Ying. Very interesting story behind this horse because he was bought out of Australia as a 3-year-old. In fact, someone on Twitter pointed out after his last run that he's the only horse in training anywhere in the world that ran in a Cox Plate that was not won by Winx. Hmm. He ran in the 2014 Cox Plate behind Adelaide, obviously the Secretariat Stakes winner. But he was named Almalad in Australia. Anyway, he's been in Hong Kong now for the best part of 4 years, 3.5 years now. And he's one of these horses who is always around the mark, but he just can't break through. He just can't get that win. He's finished second at his last 4 starts, beaten a neck, a length and a quarter, a short head, and a neck. The market's probably going to take him on in this race because Zach Purton has jumped off to ride Rocketeer, another horse bought out of Australia. But the thing with Friends of Ka Ying, he gets the 10-pound claim of Victor Wong aboard on now, so he gets down in the weights. He's going to roll forward. He's a very interesting horse in this spot, and I was speaking to Casper Founds, his trainer, about him the other night, and he thinks that this is sort of the last roll of the dice before they have to resort to extreme measures to try and get another win. So I think he's won very much worth watching this weekend. That's race 7, number 6, Friends of Ka Ying.
Excellent. Back at it. And what's the timing for that card on Saturday?
Yeah, so it's actually a Friday night card this week. It's a Saturday in Hong Kong. So it starts at 1 a.m. Eastern time, and it'll go through till close to 6 a.m. I think it's 5:50 a.m. or 5:45 a.m. Will be the last post. But it's definitely a fascinating card. But yeah, definitely one worth watching going forward. And then, our next Sharp In card comes up actually Sunday week, your time, Monday in Hong Kong. It's a public holiday, and that's one where the first. It's the first two graded stakes of the season in Hong Kong, two G3s, and it's where you start to see horses stepping out. You'll likely see horses like Beauty Generation there, Live Victory, the likes of Beauty Only as well. So you're getting to see some of these horses now starting to come back, and that's where it starts to get very exciting as the rest of the world is sort of winding down in terms of racing. Hong Kong is definitely picking up.
Yeah, absolutely. And we'll look forward to more conversation on that front. And before we go, we should also, Andrew, you mentioned Winx, and when we talked last week, we were getting ready for her to take part in the Optic White, the Colgate race. She was 1 to 100, and I tell you, the explosiveness is really, it's just crazy. I mean, because, and the funny thing is, no matter how many times people watch her win, they still seem to get nervous at turning for home. They think, oh my God, she's in trouble, and then 3 seconds later, she's not.
That's the extraordinary thing about her, is that that explosiveness, as you say, and the fact that she's still doing it now as a seven-year-old is quite something. She's looking, in some ways, better than she did when she was four, and that's a very interesting prospect, because obviously you wouldn't be expecting her to get better, and perhaps she's not. Look, the fields she's met at her first two starts are probably not of the quality of fields that she's met before. But as you say, you still have those couple of seconds of worry, of concern that she's not going to be able to pick up, and then suddenly she just puts the afterburners on and she races past. I mean, if you'd said at the top of the straight, even at the furlong pole, if you'd said that she would win that race on the weekend by four lengths, I think the margin was, you just wouldn't have thought that was possible, because she was definitely under pressure to try and chase the leaders down. But that's the extraordinary thing about her. She's returned in fine fettle, and it's going to be exciting to see what she does. She's meant to run. There's a couple of options for where she goes next, but I'd say the most likely place she'll go is the Turnbull Stakes, which she won last year by seven lengths. That's at Flemington in two weeks' time. So it'll be interesting to see where she goes. But she's such an excitement machine, and it's been amazing, I must say, seeing the American reaction. I think I said it last week too. Just the amount of reaction. It's becoming noticeable now in Australia how much love there is for her in the United States, which is why when there was the prospect raised of her potentially going to Gulfstream in January for this new $7 million turf race, it wasn't immediately scoffed at, because I think there's a part of Chris Waller, her trainer, who would love to be able to take her to the States and show her off to fans there. It's very unlikely given the preparation she's got to undergo, but look, it'd be amazing to see her in the United States at some point.
Well, we'll see. There is that suggestion, and it's going to be interesting to see what reaction Gulfstream and the Stronach Group get to the, you know, the extra Pegasus race, the turf side of things. And I mean, as it stands now, they can barely conceive of what horses are going to assemble for the main track race, let alone another 12 for the turf race. So we'll see. But that getting her here would be a sensation, no doubt about it. Andrew, I appreciate it. Andrew N.J. Hawkins on Twitter, everybody, and we'll look forward to next week, and we'll talk about those first two graded stakes, the National Day Cup and the Celebration Cup. There's also a small, I know the Japanese have got the Sprinters Stakes Day coming up next weekend as well. Andrew, have a great week. We'll talk next week.
Cheers, Dave. Chat next week.
Andrew Hawkins. Let's take a break. We'll come back. Author Milt Toby is going to join us. And we've talked to Milt every time, basically, in my memory, that he's come out with one of his books. He's gone back to something of the mystery genre in taking Shergar, Thoroughbred Racing's most famous cold case. And Toby had written, he had written a piece in the Blood Horse that certainly was, you know, the basis and you know part of the book, and he expanded it from there into the book itself. And I think the last time we spoke would have been, I think, about the Dancer's Image book. And of course, in its own way, I mean, something of a mystery, not in the same vein as Shergar's kidnapping and murder, but obviously, this is a, you know, the digging into, you know, historic mysteries. Something Milt enjoys. He's going to join us next. Milt Toby, stay with us.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Hey, what's going on? Mikey here, and I'm going to tell you about an offer from my good friends at ExpressBet. Let's be honest. We know you love playing the races, but you can't always make it to the track. Sometimes life just gets in the way of a good bet. Well, what if I told you about a place where you never miss a bet and you start with house money? You'd say I'm crazy, right? Well, not at ExpressBet. Your first $100 are on them. That's right. Sign up with ExpressBet.com using promo code XBRadio, bet $100, and they'll deposit $100 back into your account the very next day. Hey, plus you could get an extra $25 if you use Express Fund Direct Deposit. You see what I mean? House money for betting the races. It's that easy. Check it out at ExpressBet.com to learn more. And don't forget to sign up for promo code XBRadio. You're gonna love it. And that's a Mikey guarantee. Must be 18 years or older and 21 years old in certain states to open an account with ExpressBet and reside in a state where such activity is legal. Void or prohibited. National Gambling Support Line, 800-522-4700.
Pennsylvania's breeding program is truly the most lucrative in North America. Now, we'll pay a 50% breeder award for PA-sired, PA-bred maidens who run first, second, or third, with 25% for non-PA-sired PA-breds. Last year, the number of mares bred rose by 15% in Pennsylvania. And unlike some other states, our Racehorse Development Fund can only be used to support Pennsylvania breeding and racing. This is Brian Sanfratello. Please visit us at PABred.com.
Hi, this is retired race caller Tom Durkin. So, after this year's Derby, I stopped by Top Round Roast Beef on Shelbyville Road in St. Matthews. I got two sandwiches, one for back at the hotel and another for the trip back home to New York. The first one was so good, I had the other one right there. Certified Angus beef, roasted 5 hours, each one made to order. You can taste the difference. Top Round Roast Beef, Shelbyville Road, St. Matthews. Tell them Tom Durkin sent you. Oh, by the way, try the frozen custard too.
Hi, John Parada here, inviting you to join me in the Dublin Racing Club, along with friends like Steve Bick and Tom Durkin. If you have an interest in Ireland and horse racing, it's the best way to be involved with both. So log on now to DublinRacingClub.com and come join us at one of Ireland's 26 racetracks.
The Dublin Racing Club is designed to introduce racing fans to the ownership experience by participating in the sport in Ireland. For more information on the Dublin Racing Club, log on to DublinRacingClub.com.
Breaking down the biggest stories in the world of horse racing. This is At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
When you grow up, live it like a good boy oughta. And your mama takes a shine of her best son.
We're back at the races. Coming up on 15 to the top of the hour, it is always a pleasure when I get a chance to talk to Milt Toby. And Milt can do, he's a multiple threat. He writes, he's an attorney, he can advise on equine law. But we like it particularly when we can talk to him about his latest writing effort. And he's revisiting Shurgar, Taking Shurgar. And Milt, always a pleasure. Good morning.
Morning, Steve. Thanks for having me on the show this morning.
Yeah, it's my absolute pleasure. And anybody who's read any of your books will certainly add the Shurgar story to their library. Before we dive in to what got you on this story, and I know you had written the piece in The Blood Horse and expanded from there, but I first want to get a quick update, if you don't mind providing it, on how things stand for University Press of Kentucky, which is a wonderful publishing house that was basically being threatened by the governor, let's just say.
Luckily, the University Press is still doing just fine. The threat by the governor that you're talking about, there a substantial amount of the UK Press's funding comes from the state, or came from the state, I should say. The upcoming budget eliminated about $750,000 of state funding for the press. Luckily, that wasn't the only source of funding. They're still doing just fine. I'm happy to tell you that. You know, taking that hit always hurts, but it's in no danger of closing down. They're still doing everything that they've been doing so well for many decades. So I'm glad to be able to tell you that.
Yeah, and in fact, tonight I see that Mary Jean Wall is going to have a book discussion at Paul Sawyer Public Library. Tonight, 6:30 to 7:30, her new book, Madam Bell. And there's just an endless array of titles that come from University Press. And I've got easily, I don't know, 15 or more. And we know that, particularly when it comes to equine titles, they've been, very much supportive, and I'm sure that any number of authors, our friend Jennifer Kelly, that has got the Sir Barton story coming out next year, they've been a great source of titles when it comes to horses. And for you, let's dive into Shurgar and how this drew your attention.
I was working at the Blood Horse. I was on the editorial staff in 1983 when Shurgar was stolen. And it was a big deal then. Got a lot of press coverage on the other side of the Atlantic, not quite so much here in the States. But it was one of those things that just sort of hangs in the back of your mind for a long time. And yeah, on the surface, it's a very simple story. A gang of armed men stole this horse. They asked for ransom. The ransom wasn't paid. Horse never was recovered. Everybody assumed it's the Irish Republican Army. End of story. But in something like it, there has to be more to it. So I did some sort of casual research over the years, but about 3 years ago, I decided it was time to look more in depth. And was lucky to land the University Press of Kentucky as a publisher. They're an academic press, which means that they were demanding two things. A compelling story, which I was confident was there, but also research, very comprehensive, rigorous research. And I learned how to do that when I was being trained as an attorney, so I thought it was a perfect fit, and it's been great fun working with them. But that was the idea. There's a backstory, and I wanted to tell that, and it hadn't been told before. So, 3 years later, the book will be out in a week or so.
Unbelievable. You can get the advance ordering now, and we'll get you that information before we're through. For those that only know and have heard Shurgar's name in passing, and only maybe know that there was the incident, provide the backstory and the lead up to the incident. And Shergar, I'm trying to think of who would be an appropriate from that era or the modern era, who would be an appropriate equivalent in American racing that people would instantly gasp if they understood a similar circumstance happening here.
That's a really good question, and that was a question I put to several people. And one of the answers that kept coming up was Secretariat. You know, Secretariat was, he won the Triple Crown. He set an amazing record in the Belmont Stakes. Shergar didn't win the English Triple Crown, but he set a record that still stands in the Epsom Derby. He won by 10 lengths. He was syndicated for a record amount, you know, 10 point some million pounds at the end of 1983. And he was a superstar in Ireland and England. He was the equivalent of Secretariat here, I think. And when he was stolen, I think it had the same effect as if somebody had walked onto Claiborne and taken, you know, Secretariat, you know, much like they did when Fanfreluche was stolen there. It was a very big deal. So you know, it can't be underemphasized, you know, almost 35 years down the road, of how important it is. And one of the things I learned when I was doing research in Ireland is the theft of Shergar is still a sore point among many of the Irish people. It's an embarrassment that a horse like Shergar was stolen on their watch.
Well, and that puts it on an equivalent of probably the death of Farlap, which became a cause celeb for Australian and New Zealand fans. That whenever an Australian or New Zealander that was a race fan encountered an American, why'd you murder Farlap? That's the greeting that Americans received for decades.
And I think that's a fair comparison. Shergar was a national hero in Ireland.
You had to go do some research, and in advance of the visit, and when I said you were going to join us and taking on this story and fleshing out you know, more than what you had written in the Blood Horse, which now, 2 years ago, when did that piece appear?
It was almost 2.5 years ago. It was very well received, and that was one of the things that sort of urged me to continue and then you expand it into a book.
How much new information do you think you uncovered? And talk about the research and going to Ireland and having these conversations. A lot of the principles are not just still alive, but are still prominent.
That's very true. I wound up making 2 trips to Ireland and you know, also added trips to England because a lot was going on there as well. And the interesting thing was I found people that I didn't expect to find and found information that I didn't expect to find through those people. You know, some of the issues that show up in the book that as far as I know, haven't been seen anywhere, at least not in full. Several months after Shergar was stolen, the syndicate issued a report to the syndicate members. It's a lengthy report explaining the syndicate's take on things. I came across a copy of that in a dusty envelope in the Blood Horse files, which they were kind enough to let me use here. There have never been any arrests, never been any charges, never been any convictions associated with the theft of Shergar. And there's never been an official statement from the Irish police, the Garda. But in investigating a long-running dispute between one of the shareholders and an insurance company, I came across an affidavit from one of the Irish police officers who investigated the theft. He was confirming the details that came out in an autobiography of an IRA man named Sean O'Callaghan, that the horse was stolen by IRA people, that he was killed a few days after he was taken, and that they continued to negotiate like he was still alive. That, as far as I know, is the only semi-official statement from the police that had never been seen. I came across what I believe to be a Polaroid photograph of Shergar after he was stolen, before he was killed, that was part of evidence used by the thieves to convince the syndicate that he was still alive. That's never been seen before for the book. So there was a lot of information. What was most interesting was to try and answer the question of why he was still in Ireland in the first place. The Aga Khan, who bred the horse and raced him, had offers to syndicate Shergar in the States for substantially more money than he was eventually syndicated to stand in Ireland. And trying to investigate the intersection between political issues in Northern Ireland and economic changes in the South that made it almost inevitable that Shergar would be there and that he would be a target for theft was, to me, the most interesting part of the research and maybe the most interesting part of the book.
That's an interesting sidebar, really, that he just as easily could have made his way to America, because he had been, how old was he in 83?
He was five. It was on the eve of his second season at stud at the Aga Khan's Ballymanny stud outside of the Curra.
Among the people that you came across, you talk about, you know, some of the interviews, and you said that I know that one of the people very well may have been the last among the last to see Shergar alive. And you know, talk about the motivation. I mean, what was the end game here? If indeed IRA was involved, I mean, what was their goal? It was just a financial?
I think that's probably true. I mentioned the intersection of politics in the North and economics in the South. In 1969, that was basically when British troops came to Northern Ireland to restore order. And that was the birth of the Provisional Irish Republican Army. And from that point on, they were in a long war to drive the British troops out. And for quite a while, they were getting substantial support from Muammar Gaddafi in Libya. But the most support came from the U.S. And at some point, Gaddafi's support dropped to nothing. And the FBI in the States began a serious fight against money and weapons going to the IRA. So their two major sources of weapons were cut off. So they needed money. And by 1983, they had tried kidnapping business executives that hadn't gone well. And I think someone decided at the middle level of the IRA that, hey, let's steal a horse. He's worth a lot of money, and we won't get the bad press that we get when we kidnap people. I think it was strictly financial, but in that sense, it was a very overt political act. It was directly involved with the IRA's war against the British in Northern Ireland.
In retrospect, and in examining, the reaction at the time, bring us back to that, Milt. I imagine that, the outrage, shock, and somewhat, I guess, horror at the time had to be acute.
Very much so. It was the thought that there would not be a public outrage over stealing a horse in Ireland was possibly the biggest mistake the thieves made. The outrage that this could happen in Ireland, and, you know, the Irish have had a centuries-long love affair with horses. The outrage was much greater than it ever was over the business executives that were kidnapped. So the whole plan, I think, was doomed from the start. So everyone was just incensed, and there were issues with the search. There were complaints and criticisms of the Irish police. One of the big issues was that the police weren't notified for almost 8 hours after the horse was taken. There were various reasons for this, but the result was that the thieves had an 8-hour head start. And you can drive almost anywhere in Ireland in 8 hours. So they could have been anywhere, and that was one of the reasons why the search just never did work. They never had a chance of solving the problem, solving the mystery.
Who else did you get a chance to meet with and talk to? I'm sure some people are quite happy to talk 30 years later, others may be reticent.
Some people were very happy to talk. Others were interested in helping but didn't want to be identified, which were requests that I honored. Captain Sean Barry, he was the subject of the Blood Horse article. he was the head of the Irish Thoroughbred Breeders Association at the time, and he was involved in a whole series of negotiations with people that he was convinced at the time, and I think still believes, were the thieves who actually had the horse. And he was just a fascinating person. He was a former Army veteran. He was adamantly opposed to everything the IRA was doing. And at the time, as he was going through the process of being involved in the negotiations, he made meticulous notes on little scraps of paper that he later assembled into about 18 pages of very dense, single-spaced typed reminiscences, and he gave me a copy of those to use. And to my knowledge, that hasn't happened before. So that was the sort of person I talked with. In England, I talked to the attorneys involved. I talked to the insurance people involved. The theft of Shurgard generated an extraordinary number of claims, primarily against insurers associated with Lloyd's of London, and there were disputes there too. One of the issues was whether you had liability for the death of Shurgard or liability insurance to cover his theft. If you had theft insurance, the insurers paid off quickly. If you had liability insurance, they tended not to, because there was no proof the horse was dead. That was the genesis of several disputes that went for years and wound up in court. So, yeah, people were helpful. Some people weren't. So, yeah, some people weren't interested in talking at all. It was a mixed bag.
You mentioned Gaddafi and the IRA, and I'm hearing from a friend on Facebook, kind of a rogue group from the IRA, more the suspect than IRA management, quote unquote. But the French bloodstock agent, what's the tie-in?
The agent was named Jean-Michel Gambet. I assume that's who you're talking about. He had a bloodstock business in Lexington, and there was no obvious connection until after Shurgard was stolen. But Jean-Michel Gambet was killed, or he committed suicide, depending on who you ask, in a few months, I think about 2 months before Shurgard was stolen. And there was a dispute at the time. His body was found in a burning car near Keeneland Racecourse on a rural road. And there was a question about whether it was suicide or whether he had been killed. And that was never actually resolved. The Lexington Police Department concluded it was a suicide. A coroner's inquest concluded that it was a homicide. And had there not been the theft of Shurgard a couple of months later, I don't think that we would be talking about Jean-Michel Gambet right now. But some of the press overseas sort of grabbed the idea that here was a French bloodstock agent. The Aga Khan was living in France. The Aga Khan owned the farm where the horse was taken. Maybe this was some sort of revenge. There were questions about a loan that Gambet had taken out to buy a stallion that the Aga Khan had been racing. So there was at least a peripheral logical connection there. I looked through the police files here that I got through an open records request, and part of the file was a check that Gambet had written to the Aga Khan as partial payment for a horse named Byron, a stallion that Gambet was supposedly going to stand. It was returned for non-sufficient funds. So there was at least a tiny bit of a paper trail there. I interviewed at some length the Lexington detective who investigated, a gentleman named Drexel Neal, and he was convinced then and convinced now that it was all coincidental. But it was the sort of thing that if you're looking for a conspiracy theory, you could find one there.
What fallout that is still felt today from the insurance side, from security at facilities? One of the things that is pretty remarkable, and even to this day, is the openness of the backstretch at the racetrack and the accessibility. What changed after the Shurgard incident?
One of the things that changed a lot, as you suggest, it involves the security. The security at the races was fairly tight. in Britain at the time. But the security at breeding farms was virtually non-existent, and that was the case at Ballymaney, where Shergar stood. The farm was protected by a perimeter fence and a gate with a chain latch and a snap. And one of the issues at the time was, why was there no security? And the reason was there wasn't a reason or no expectation of a reason to have security. One of the shareholders who had mortality insurance but didn't have theft insurance were the folks at Coolmore Stud. And they wound up suing their bloodstock agent and their insurance agent for negligence for not insisting on theft insurance. It went to court, to Chancery Court in London, and the judge said that he was not going to agree with them. He said that there was no reason to expect anyone to steal a valuable stallion in Ireland at the time, so there was no reason to insist on theft insurance. Security's gotten better now. That's just one of the things. The other issue is, I think the insurance business has changed a bit, and people get theft insurance now. At the time, theft insurance generally was free, but you had to ask for it, along with your mortality policy. If you didn't ask, insurance agents tended to not toss it in, and that was the issue with the Coolmore people. One of the very prominent veterinarians at the time, Stan Cosgrove, was a shareholder in the syndicate. He didn't have theft insurance either, and his claim has still never been paid 35 years down the road. He fought it for a very long time and finally ran out of resources. So there were changes and issues with the way the industry was being run that weren't apparent until Shergar was stolen.
Amazing. Taking Shergar, an examination by Milt Toby of one of the most famous cold cases in racing. And, you know, I speculated that the last thing we talked about was the dancer's image story, and you know that, and even further back, and even more obscured by history. You seem drawn to these kinds of stories, Milt. I mean, is that fair to say?
Yeah, it really is. When I'm looking for something to write about, I want to find a story that people think they know, but in fact don't. Dancer's image was one of those stories. Everybody knew that he was disqualified. Nobody knew the backstory. Nobody knew the details. With Shergar, everybody who knows Shergar knows that he was stolen. They assume it was the IRA. But there are a lot of details. There are a lot of stories associated with it, people not directly involved that had never been written about before. That was one of the fun parts about this. It's showing people that, hey, a story you thought was very simple may not be quite so much. One of the most interesting things that came out of this, I met a gentleman named Stephen Schwartz, who at the time was involved with an organization called the Mobius Group. Mobius was involved in remote viewing. And some of your listeners will probably be familiar with remote viewing. It's the idea that you can be sitting in your office and be able to have an idea of what's going on somewhere else in the world. It sounds like magic, and when you see some of the results, it appears to be magic. But the federal government, the military in particular, has done a lot of research into remote viewing since the end of World War II. In October, after Shergar was stolen, one of the insurers, actually an attorney for one of the insurers, hired the Mobius Group to do remote viewing exercises to try and locate Shergar. This was a secret for 35 years. I spent 3 days on an island off of the coast of Washington State going through files from the Mobius Group that nobody had opened since 1984. And that, for me, was probably the most interesting part of the book. It was, as I say, something nobody had ever seen before. It was a side of the story that was brand new. They weren't successful. The remote viewing experiment didn't work. But as Stephen Schwartz said, you know, because they were unsuccessful doesn't mean they were wrong. But it was an interesting look at a new way, a new way to approach the problem.
Well, if you have not read Dancer's Image, you should. And if you haven't read Milt's book on Noor, which we've talked about, not just with Milt, we talked about it with John Shurafs, who got to jump aboard Knorr late in his life, late in Knorr's life, not late in John's life. Caninero, the second, also a topic, and of course in the wonderful Thoroughbred Legends series, Milt tabbed to right ruffian. And what's next, Milt? There's got to be something exciting that's caught your interest.
I'm still looking for one of those stories that people think they know and they really don't, but I'll let you know when something comes up.
Well, and let everybody know how they can advance order. Copies will be ready in about a week.
That's my understanding. Amazon is taking pre-orders. I believe Barnes & Noble is as well. When the books actually become available, if people can get a signed copy from me through my website. So those are the options right now.
And will you do some, I imagine, as we get close to Breeders' Cup, you got to do some signings, right? And during Keeneland, at the books, at the shop, or in town in Lexington?
Yeah, absolutely. And in fact, the Keeneland has in the past had a lecture series for authors. They are reviving that, and I'm going to be the first speaker for the lecture series. It's going to be on the evening of October 23rd, which is the last Tuesday before the end of the race meeting at the Keeneland Library. That's going to be great fun.
There you go. So October 23rd, mark that down. There'll be a lot of people in town and in the vicinity, whether you're in for Keeneland or whether you're in for Breeders' Cup 10 days later. And whatever signings, Milt, let me know, and we'll make sure people can go and see you. And if for those of you that aren't going to make it to Kentucky, you can visit any online book merchant, and at the same time, gather up all of Milt's writing, because every one is wonderful. Dancer's Image, Knorr, Caninero, The Ruffian. People still collect the Thoroughbred Legends series. Haskin will be on later, and Steve's got two in that wonderful, 23, right? 23 in the series?
That's right. Yeah, 20-some. I forget the exact number.
They're wonderful. It's almost like a children's. It's an adult version of a children's collection that when we were all kids and had Hardy Boys and Bobbsey Twins and whatnot. You collect them like that, and they look great on the shelf. I've got, I think, 7 or 8. And Milt, whether it's legal advice and those that are looking for equine law answers, Milt has got titles on that topic as well, and you're a go-to for me on any number of topics over the years.
I appreciate it, Steve. I always enjoy chatting with you.
Milt Toby, and you can follow him at Twitter. He's not a big Twitterer, but that would be one way to reach him. And I cannot laud the work of the University Press of Kentucky enough. Their catalog, if you want to go find eclectic topics, and a lot of equine, and in fact, in the most recent catalog, I see that there's a new biography of Isaac Murphy, the Prince of Jockeys, by Pelham McDaniels, and another topic that caught my eye, Bound to the Fire, How Virginia's Enslaved Cooks Help Invent American Cuisine. There's an unbelievable, a treasure trove of fascinating topics at the University Press of Kentucky, and very pleased that their funding source has been maintained, because they do great work. And Jennifer Kelly, excited about her Sir Barton book that will come out next year as well. Milt, always a pleasure. Hope to see you when I'm in town for Breeders' Cup.
Yeah, drop me a note. We'll get together. It'd be fun.
Absolutely. Milt Toby, everybody. And Taking Shurgar, his newest title, Thoroughbred Racing's most famous cold case, Milt Toby. Let's take a break. Going to visit with Tony Black after this. Steve Haskin to come, Ashley Burness as well, way overdue. We haven't been able to connect with Ashley. That's my fault. Rich Eng, and more. Stay with us.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
The thoroughbred breeding industry will never be the same with the launch of Daily Racing Form's Buyer Sire Performance Standings, presented by Darley. These groundbreaking ratings use buyer speed figures to measure a stallion's performance beyond wins and earnings, focusing on providing a measurement of a sire's true ability to produce high-quality horses. View the Buyer Sire Performance Standings at drf.com/buyer-sire and get the true information that breeds results. That's drf.com/buyer-sire.